and welcome to Wonder Pod, episode 29. That's right, or to 29. Joining me on this fine Thursday night, as always, is Gunsage.
Charlotte Jonathan.
Okay. And Billy Bob, too. And joining us from what I've been told, a much saner and friendlier country than the one Gunsage and I reside in, except for Quebec, Patrick.
What's going on, people? WonderPod episode 29. Woo!
I hear we're big in Canada, mostly due to Patrick.
Yep.
Can't get a career down here in the States where we're big in Canada, and I'm damn happy about it. Gunsage, what have you been playing this week?
Well, I've been playing the new Castlevania game, The Harmony of Dissonance or Discord or Despair or Dis-something.
I think it's Despair.
I think it's Despair. Well, because they've got so many different bullshit titles, it's just ridiculous.
I was almost picturing a Vampire Discordia game, you know, like Anarchy.
Yeah.
There's like no point. Anyway, sorry.
But it's not bad. But there's a lot of questionable design choices. I might end up going ahead and reviewing it. Let's see, what else have I been playing? I played a little more Hydro Thunder. I've mostly been playing Lost Odyssey. I'm finally on the third disc, and I can't put it down now. It's just fucking crazy. That's about
Shit,
it.
Shit, you're catching me. I think I'm on the third disc. Now I'm going to have to fucking beat it. I think I said on a previous show I was going to beat it before you got to me. Nah, damn it. I think that's 1 foot race I could easily lose, because I know it'll happen if I get back into it, and I still need to beat a few other games. Patrick, what have you been playing this week?
Well, I went back and played an old Nintendo DS game. I guess you can't really say old, because the DS isn't really that old of a system. But I started replaying the original launch title for the Nintendo DS. That is, of course, for those who do not know, Super Mario 64 DS. If anyone out there has a DS but never played Mario 64 back in the day, you should really get this game if you can find it. Finding it is a hard thing. I don't think it's for sale anymore. The controls take a little getting used to. They really do. They're not as smooth as the N64 version because there's no controller on the DS or a stick to play with. But aside from that, you get used to the controls. It's the best version of this classic game ever made, in my opinion. It even has all new paintings to jump into and all new levels to explore exclusively for the DS, so it's not just a remake. They've added to it. The story even changes a little bit. You don't start off as Mario, and you're actually trying to find him in one of the new levels that I was talking about. You know, it's good platforming, fun, classic Nintendo stuff, updated with a map on the top screen and a lot of fun mini-games there as well. There's a lot of card games and stuff. I recommend it. Even if you played the original game, you know, there's lots new in it. And, yeah, like I said, I recommend the title. What else have I? On Xbox, haven't really played anything new this week. I do have a little bit of a beef. I have been enjoying Hydro Thunder Hurricane, just like I said last week, with a lot of friends from the podcast actually online. Haven't played a lot of single player except to occasionally try to move up the ranks on some of the times of some of the time trials. We've all talked about how much we liked this little $15 game last week, so I'm not going to go into it again in detail. If you missed it, go on to iTunes and check out episode 28. However, I'm going to respond to one of the reoccurring criticisms of this game that's driving me crazy. We all know there's two opinions on this game. Some people like it, some people don't. But I want to respond to the fact that a lot of people on YouTube especially and on message boards are really complaining about, and I'm going to put this in quotations, you'll understand when I finish, unrealistic water physics. Emphasis on the word unrealistic. Some people are harping on Hydro Thunder's unrealistic physics. I mean, come on, really? Is that what you're complaining about in the game? The physics are unrealistic? The entire game is unrealistic. It's supposed to be unrealistic. In this game, you can race as a giant rubber ducky, turbo boosting into waterfalls, over 100-foot cliffs, being attacked by 150-foot Vikings with robot voices. You race boats that look like spaceships from Battlestar Galactica, smash into a wall, turning your boat into a flaming wreck of a mess. Only 3 seconds later, all the particles of your boat come back together, and you're in the race again. You're racing in Area 51 through a portal that takes you to another dimension where your co-pilot sounds like a chipmunk. Does any of this sound realistic? No, so why are idiots complaining that the water physics are unrealistic in a completely unrealistic arcade game? Anyways, that was my rant on Hydro Thunder.
They're complaining because it bites them in the ass and doesn't allow them to win. That's why they're complaining.
Yeah, basically. And that's another thing. If you suck at a game, it doesn't mean the game sucks. It means you suck. But yeah, you're right, Bruce. What else have I played? Not much, really. I haven't played anything on PC this week. I've been off Steam completely. No Alien Swarm and no Bookworm Egypt Adventures for me. Of course, we played some Left 4 Dead. I think it was this week that Gunsage and I, we were in a versus match, and amazingly, with me as his partner, we actually managed to get a victory, which was totally amazing. That's all I've been playing this week.
I've been playing Hydro... Oh, shit. Well, right now I'm playing Fruit Ninja on my iPhone. and I forgot to pause it. What, you've never heard of Fruit Ninja? Okay,
I have.
Fruit Ninja is like the most fun, but yet most pointless game ever. This would have gone well with G's question last week. You literally swipe at the screen to chop fruit. The more fruit you chop, the more points you get. You can't chop bombs, though. Yep. You chop bombs, it's bad. You miss the fruit, it's bad. But it is like the most addictive, yet repetitive, yet fun game ever. And I'm currently playing it while these guys are talking, because I don't have to flap my lips. So I've been playing Fruit Ninja. The Hydro Thunder thing, yeah, unrealistic water physics, like the giant sea monsters are realistic. The spears shooting out of the Mayan temples are realistic. The police boats that never crash but crash you constantly are realistic. The warp jumping realistic. I mean, I could go on and on. So yeah, if you're whining about unrealistic water physics, it's like I just said when I interrupted Patrick. It's because you're losing and you don't like losing. Too bad. It's a racing game. You lose occasionally, okay? If you lose all the time, you probably wasted $15.
You lose, sir.
I lose. Good day. I win a couple every night, but I lose a lot of them. Sometimes it's due to people I know and know well running me over. Sometimes it's just because I'm not feeling it in that track. Sometimes I get eaten by a giant water monster that's coming out of those unnecessary and weird water physics. You're a jackass if you're crying about water physics in a video game. All right. I've also fallen back into the World of Warcraft hole. Nothing really to talk about there. Big boss battles, raids, other silly shit, making gold, making clothes, setting crap on fire. It's keeping me happy. It's keeping me busy in the MMO market until Star Wars takes my soul sometime next year. Let's see. Other than that, yeah, Left 4 Dead. I was on the losing end of that match. I kind of think I want more bots and less people. Although Glacinator and G are great teammates, but sometimes I think their minds wander a little bit. I don't know. There was a couple occasions there where it's like, is anybody paying attention? Oh, no. Okay. but also, too, in defense of Glacinator and G, I play with Patrick and Gunsage all the time. So it's probably a little easier for me to get into a team-based battle with them and do better than I would with just about anybody else. And it seems like karmically, when I'm facing them, I get raped every time. So, I mean, it's kind of, on one hand, I'll make fun of those guys for, you know, lack of attention a little bit. But on the other hand, I'll just call it the fact that I always lose to Patrick and Gunsage. But still, Left 4 Dead is fun. And that's really all I've been playing. We don't have any real specific user questions this week. I think a few weeks ago, Glacinator asked when we're ever going to do a live show. If you've ever actually been here during the recording process, which most of you have not, a live show would be an unmitigated clusterfuck, but probably funny. It wouldn't talk about games much, and we'd probably have to have the show password protected to keep the riffraff out. I'm thinking of one specific riffraff in particular. But actually, the thought of doing a live show, Glacinator, has crossed my mind, but I'd like our audience to be a little bigger and have the possibility of people calling in and that kind of thing before we really think about doing a live show. But believe me, it will happen at some point down the road. The other thing, too, that I learned today is, as you've heard me say multiple times on this show, I don't use Facebook. So today I thought, you know, I'll go see if Patrick's added any, hey, ask us questions on the WonderPod Online Facebook using the Morphine Nation Facebook, because I don't have my own Facebook. I've said Facebook now 60 times. This story has a point. So I asked a smart-ass question, and of course it's the Morphine Nation, so nobody really knows who it is, except at the end of the question I put in, Gunsage is not, I repeat, not allowed to ask questions. In parentheses I put, I probably just gave away who is typing this. Because Gunsage is the class clown. He would be the first one to ask an RPG question that nobody but him could ask. And not even using a fake account. We love Gunsage for that, but at the same time, I was trying to dissuade him from being a smartass. But I forgot a key and important element in this little crew. The fact that Patrick doesn't cuss, hardly at all, and apologizes when he does. Believe me, play with him on Xbox Live. It's the cutest thing ever. And the fact that he's usually like the most even-tempered, nicest guy of this group, as far as you know, I never think about him being a smartass. Yet, it came back to bite me today. So, here's the response I got to my asking for questions. Patrick Byron. Did I say that right? Or Byrne? Byrne, yeah, sorry. I realized as soon as it came. Bad Bruce. Who is this Mario guy I hear about? Yeah, I expected Gunsage, and I got Patrick. So Bruce McGee learned a lesson today, and it's also telling me that I don't need to have any more to do with Facebook and just let Patrick handle it. So a lesson learned.
That's great.
Yes, it is. And I'm admitting that I got trashed on there. So there we go. I think the Facebook experiment is over for me, and I was right in my initial opinion. Okay, so that's user questions / listening to Bruce McGee make fun of himself. Let's move on to the discussion topic. Now, the discussion topic actually came from a news story I passed on, and it came in response to a comment from that news story. I forget now what the news story was about, but it brought up the PC DRM, it was Kotaku was talking about PC gaming's doing really well this year, right? Okay, so I scrolled down into the comments to see what people were saying, and this one came across, and it pissed me off. It really, really pissed me off. We all know DRM sucks. It's company's response to gamers pirating crap. The piracy versus secure ROM battles is never ending, yada, yada, yada. But this takes the cake, and it really makes me want to stab this guy, whose name I don't remember now, in the face repeatedly. And I quote, this is his comment, part of it. The DRM issues have made me wary about purchasing games for the PC, and I absolutely love PC games. Keyboard plus mouse equals best shooter controls ever. Yeah, I think Patrick would disagree with you on that. I feel that Steam is a hassle because I don't want to have to log on prior to playing offline an offline single player game. Really? Really? Your chubby sausage fingers are so unable to work a mouse that you can't click to log on to Steam. That's just too much of a hassle for you. When in actuality, Steam works is a really great way to get rid of this DRM problem. Really? Okay, gentlemen. Patrick, my question to you is Steam that big a hassle for you now that you use it, or is it a good way to get rid of this secure ROM, DRM, all this other bullshit gamers whine about?
Okay, well, I actually like Steam. As a matter of fact, I think it's a really good service. I've only been using it since I got my new Darth Vader PC about a month ago. And I think Steam is really good. It's sort of like an Xbox Live, but more, obviously, PC-type service. And I don't see how logging into Steam, all you gotta do is start one of the games which you downloaded off Steam, and doesn't Steam automatically upload? It does for me. So, I mean, I don't even know what its problem is about logging in. I click onto Half-Life 2, automatically Steam opens up. So I don't even know what this guy, he doesn't have to type anything. I know I don't have to type anything. I really think Steam's a step in the right direction, and this guy's pretty much an idiot, really.
I don't have mine on auto.
Right.
But it's still, you can set things to single click on PC-based or Windows-based PCs. I hit click and Steam comes on. There are my games. I don't have to worry about anything else. Gunsage, do you like Steam, and would you like to into this idiot for being so lazy that his sausage fingers are whining about working Steam?
Well, he's literally so lazy that I really don't even get exactly what he's complaining about, because it takes all of maybe 30 seconds to load up Steam, if you've got stuff that's, you know, going to need to update and things of that nature, it is annoying whenever you have to update a game before you go to play it. I'll admit that much, but it doesn't happen so often that it's fucking annoying. On top of that, if you just keep the Steam client open, which is what you should be doing anyway, if you have a bunch of friends online, there you go. There really is no reason to even bother bitching about it if that's the case. So I think it's more of just a non-issue that he just wants to go ahead and complain about it. I have no idea what the fuck he's even complaining about, to be honest.
Yeah, that was kind of my point in bringing him up, and I'll post or I'll paste the rest of his comment here in the little evil WonderPod chat that no one else sees, so you guys can have a giggle. It's not worth reading. Thank you, Count. Oh shit, what's the Count from Sesame Street? I blew that joke. Fuck it.
The Count?
Yeah. I thought he had another name. Oh, I'm thinking Count Chocula. Never mind. My bad.
That too.
Yeah, whatever. Anyways, here's the thing though. I have this fear that he's not the only one that is so damn lazy that he doesn't want to log into Steam. Either that, or he's one of those people that just thinks piracy should be okay. Game companies should get over it. They're billionaires. You know, yeah, but overall, you gentlemen both like Steam, think it's a good service to avoid DRM, and that this guy's full of shit. Yes?
Yes.
Gotta say,
yes.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, I'm hoping like hell that this guy doesn't have a large percentage of clones out there, but it's almost a discussion topic / gamer dick, because it's just like, when I read that comment, I just was like, really? Really? You're that bloody lazy?
I was surprised how easy and quick Steam is, as someone who basically has been playing console games for the last 10 years, and I heard about Steam, and oh, I'm on Steam, and Steam this on PC, and Steam that. I always thought because it's on PC that it would be more complicated, but really, it's easy. It's a good service.
That's the other reason I brought it up, is you're a newer user to Steam. Not real too sure on Gunsage's history with Steam, but I've been using it for quite a while. I've had it since its inception, and I finally just started buying games on it. Probably since 07. And I mean, my thing is sooner or later, you'd think companies would figure out a way to use the Steam Cloud system, which is what checks the security, to work with physical copies to make it easier. You know, you'd think at this point there'd be a way to use the Steam service even with a physical copy. You know, so I mean, part of the reason I brought it up is because I wanted to tee off on this guy, and part of it was because I knew you as a newer user to Steam and not having PC gamed in a while. I kind of had never asked you for your overall opinion, Patrick, but I kind of figured you'd be right there with Gunsage and I. So, yeah, so to those of you out there with heavy sausage fingers who can't be bothered to log in to Steam, play console games, play with yourself, whatever, but just don't clog up comment threads with your stupidity. Thank you. It's been a public service announcement or something to that effect. And in the chat, I have sausage fingers after I eat pizza. Don't we all? I have tuna fingers at sometimes too, Gunsage. I'll let you figure that one out on your own. Okay.
What's that smell? Something you'll never have.
Well, we're now. I wasn't being serious when I said I was going to give Patrick things to edit out of the YouTube video, but now we are.
What's that smell? That's my ass!
If the YouTube censors are anything like the XBL censors, tuna fingers will get us in trouble.
Yep.
Okay, let's run away from this and move on to news. The first news topic is yet going to be another rant out of me. It's not really so much a story that's going to have wide-ranging impact. It's going to be me more teeing off again. This comes to us from Game Industry Biz. The headline alone made me want to just pick up my laptop and chuck it out the window. 20 million Call of Duty map packs sold. The Call of Duty franchise has now sold over 20 million map packs in total since this... Wait a minute. Uh-oh. Hold on. What? Hold on.
We have push record?
No. I didn't see a key thing in here that makes this story pointless.
What's that?
2003.
Oh, I just saw that too. 20 million map packs.
So,
Call of Duty
this just in, Modern Warfare 2's full of jerks.
Well, that was going to be my thing, is I was going to tee off. Well, listeners, yes, that's right. I'm saying, well, listeners, because this is staying in the show. when I found this story, I thought it was talking just about Modern Warfare 1 and 2, but it isn't. So we're going to start this again, and we'll see where it goes. We're just going to call it the artistic segment of the news. There you go. Okay, the Call of Duty franchise has now sold over 20 million map packs in total since the series began in 2003. GFK and the NPD Group all rate the first-person shooter as the U.S. and Europe's number one selling first-person action game. Sales helped in no small part by the superb performance of Call of Duty Modern Warfare and its sequel at retail. The Call of Duty franchise is unique in the world of entertainment and delivers one of the best multiplayer experiences ever. We are thrilled to deliver to fans exciting and engaging content that has the intensity they have come to expect from the franchise, said Activision CEO Bobby Kotick. Earlier this year, Activision revealed that only 30% of its $318 million yearly profit comes from console game sales. While Kotick has suggested that players might be happy to pay for an online Call of Duty experience. Okay, fine listeners, and I don't know how much of this is going to make it into the end of the show. Here's my thing. I thought this was just talking about the map packs for Modern Warfare 2, and I believe World at War. I think those were in the 1,200-point range as well. And I really sincerely thought that 20 million of you were idiots for paying $15 million or $15 for map packs, not even a full game. And I was going to come on here and rant about how none of you really have any right to bitch about game companies screwing you when you're willing to pay $15 just for maps. Well, your idiot host didn't read the 2003 part. So now what we're going to do is, Patrick, do you think the maps had that big of an effect, or was it the games themselves that probably made them the money?
Well, the games themselves, obviously, at the beginning. I mean, if we want to talk about the entire franchise here, I don't think map packs were a big deal. I mean, did they even have them on the original Xbox, the original PlayStation back in the day? I'm not sure if they did. So it's only been recently that they've been a big deal. So we can talk about two main or three main games, that being Modern Warfare. What's the other one there? The World at War, was that what it's called? And Modern Warfare 2. I think those are probably, you know, they're probably, that accounts for much of the 20 million packs, to be honest. And I think, yes, recently the map packs are making them a lot of money because it doesn't take them a lot of money to make these. As a matter of fact, the latest map pack, I believe, for Modern Warfare 2, doesn't it have two maps that were from Modern Warfare 1? They didn't have to work on those at all. And I can almost guarantee you that some of those other map packs are the packs. Some of those other maps were made and they just saved them until they wanted to release it for DLC. So I think these map packs are a cheap way of making a ton of money for them. The games themselves, of course, sell more and they sell it at a higher price. But don't forget, it costs them a lot more money to make these games, to make the engines, to pay for the entire process. DLC, they're not paying for anything aside from using an engine they already have. And like I said, copying maps from previous games. I honestly think the map packs are a big part of why they're making so much money. And, you know, we can see why Infinity Ward's getting pissed off without getting those bonus checks.
Actually, I could have left the 2003 out if you think about it. Because the first, I think number 3 was on the original Xbox. But the first 3 were PC, so there really was no buy map packs. It was like whatever anybody modded or created, if there was even creation tools, and that was the early part of this decade. You can't ask me to remember that. So to a point, my rant about stupid gamers kind of holds, but so you do overall think that the map packs, at least in the last 3 games, have played a large part in profit, or have paid a significant part in profits.
Oh yeah, definitely in profits, because the cost of creating them is minuscule compared to the cost of creating the actual games and promoting the games and packaging the games and printing the things and sending them to on trucks and putting them up. You know, there's such a larger, sure, they charge $60 for a game as opposed to $15 for DLC, but there's so many costs involved that I think the map packs are really good for them from a financial point of view for the company.
Gunsage, now that I've made a complete and total utter mess out of this story, is there anything you'd like to add on anything concerning COD and map packs?
This can be completely salvaged. And here's how. Anyone who's playing Modern Warfare 2 now that has downloaded the map packs is a moron. Actually, the reason I say that is because, okay, so we all went ahead and got the passing for Left 4 Dead 2. And, you know, admittedly, okay, so it's like, what, $7, I guess, 560 points. And, you know, some people might say, well, why should I have to pay for new maps? I mean, it's only really one more level and all this. And I'm like, well, first off, there's more DLC. There's more stuff that they're constantly doing every week as far as the mutations and everything like that. So they're doing what they can to keep things free for you by offering more modes of play and such. And all they're asking is $7 for a map pack. When you consider the fact that it's just one map pack and it's actually pretty decent, it's got additional achievements and all that, it reintroduces the old cast, you know, so you got more voice acting and everything like that, you're getting a lot for your money there. Versus Modern Warfare 2, where you get some old shit that you shouldn't have had to pay for in the first place because it's just rehashes, as well as some new shit, but that's it. You're not getting any achievements-based stuff. You're not getting additional voice acting or additional characters or classes or anything like that. Like, if they went ahead and included, like, 10 new weapons, and they were all strategic and tactical and all this crazy shit, that would have been awesome. But I know for a fact they didn't do that, because I know someone who has bought both the map packs, and he did it mostly because that's just about all he plays whenever he gets online. He plays fucking Modern Warfare 2, which is not a bad thing. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying it's really not worth it to basically shell out $90 for a game. Yeah, there's two map packs. There's two of them. And both are $15 a piece. It's just craziness. I mean, no discounts, no nothing. They might discount it at some point during the fall or winter, but highly unlikely. I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, it would make sense if there was an online service, you know, because at least then you could go ahead and extend out the payments. You could pay as you play, things of that nature. But $90 fucking. I don't know. I mean, I will probably end up spending about that amount getting all the Mass Effect 2 stuff, but, you know, all the Mass Effect 2 stuff, there's a shitload of packs for that, not just one or two that offer one or two small little things. So that's about all I've got.
Yeah, as messy as this story started.
But it won't be when I edit it. Tee-hee-hee.
I kind of agree with Gunsage, except I'm unabashed about it. Really, you're an idiot if you're paying $15 for just maps that don't offer something like the passing Left 4 Dead does. At least that much. And that wasn't $15. But at the same time, too, gamers constantly bitch about how companies treat them. Whine, scream, and cry about how evil Activision is. And yet, I'm betting that I'm going to just really go on an uneducated speculation and say that probably 15 million of these map packs are either Modern Warfare 1, COD World at War, or Modern Warfare 2. Yeah, I'm sorry. There's getting to be a larger and larger percentage of the gaming community who has no business bitching and moaning about how game companies treat us when you're going out shuffling off into the dark and spending the money on it anyway. So, yeah. This story started a mess and ended with me ranting like I wanted, so I'm happy. Everybody else is over there happy. That's as far as you know. Patrick will giggle or something. All right, let's move on. This story's starting to annoy me now. If I'd never read that 2003, we'd have been fine. Dumbass. Okay. Proving that I am a dumbass. This is going to be the Bruce McGee is a dumbass show. I can see the banner already. Okay. The next one comes to us from 1UP. The headline is, Why Activision Games Have No Female Leads. Well, first off, I'd like to say that this could be why most AAA titles have no female leads. But everybody knows that it's okay to smash Activision in the face because it's the in thing and it's really cool. And a lot of times they deserve it. So there you go. Activision doesn't believe female leads can sell games and has even gone so far as to change characters to avoid a lady protagonist. According to former employees, Gama Sutra reports that focus testing has led to a serious lack of females in games, and since 2005, only girl-focused licensed games like Dora or Barbie have featured female leads at all. According to the report, a 2007 game from Treyarch was tentatively titled Black Lotus. It featured an Asian female Assassin League character based on Lucy Liu, and the development team was excited about the project. But seeing testosterone-heavy hits like Halo 3 and Modern Warfare, Activision decided that players don't want a lady at the helm. One former employee claims Activision said they don't do female characters because they don't sell. Another more bluntly said they were given specific direction to lose the chick. Black Lotus lives on now as true crime Hong Kong, having changed developers and apparently lead characters. The former employees say this is endemic of a larger problem at Activision, the culture of development built on focus testing. Sources claim that publishers take the feedback it gets to extremes, stifling innovation and sometimes even sacrificing quality by making time and sensitive demands to change projects quickly. As a result, the focused test groups tend to want more of what they've already seen and enjoyed rather than innovation, and the publisher is said to follow their lead. Let me see if there's anything else. No, we'll read Activision's response. Activision, in response to the article, denied the claims. Activision respects the creative vision of its development team, said a company statement. The company does not have a policy of telling its studios what game content they can develop, nor has the company told any of its studios that they cannot develop games with female lead characters. With respect to True Crime Hong Kong, Activision did not mandate the gender of the lead character. Like all other games and media companies, Activision uses market research in order to better understand what gamers are looking for. Okay, Activision's getting bashed because they were stupid and made that response. Patrick, my first question to you is, do you think that a game with a female lead is a bad idea, or can it sell as well as a game with a male lead?
Oh, definitely can't sell. Who's ever heard of a game with a female in it? You know, a game like, I don't know, Tomb Raider? Or I don't know, maybe that Samus Aran girl from Metroid? I don't know, maybe they never played games like Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, where the female characters look sexy while they kick your ass? It sounds to me like Activision needs to get laid. Am I right? I definitely think that a game could be very successful with a female lead. I just mentioned a few of them.
Gunsage, do you think a female lead can do as well as a male lead?
Well, I mean, Pat went ahead and kind of summed up what I was going to say, but he is wrong in some areas. I mean, for the most part, we got a majority of male gamers. So that's perfectly understandable, which is exactly why male gamers would not like to go ahead and see any kinds of, you know, titties or anything else like that going on in the games. So obviously games like Bayonetta completely fucking flopped. I mean, when I'm looking at this and I'm going, look, I get it. I really do. It, you know, you want to have the big, you know, I'm fucking Marcus Fenix, bitch, characters. I get that. But on the same token, that's basically discounting any game that has ever had a female lead, whether it's successful or not. So you've got games like Beyond Good and Evil, you know, really solid game. Looking forward to the sequel, which will never come out. You know, Metroid, yeah, you never really get to see Samus really kick an ass as a woman 90% of the time, but you know that she's a woman, so there's that, even though she looks like a fucking Autobot. I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at this situation, and I'm going yes and no. I understand what they're talking about as far as the market research and everything like that. I understand why they'd be apprehensive, but on the same token, it's like, okay, but that doesn't mean that they do not sell games at all. It means that they have to try a little bit harder and often have to go ahead and put on, you know, the fucking moves in order to go ahead and get all the pervy guys to buy the game. But on the same token, it's like, well, okay, yeah, but that doesn't mean they don't sell at all. It is harder. It's more of a challenge, and I don't think Activision wants that.
Okay, here's the thing. I would like to see games with more female leads, and not ones with just, like, silly-sized fun bags stuffed in a tight jumpsuit. Don't get me wrong, I do kind of enjoy that. But writing for a steroid, bloated, freak, testosterone monster like anything in Gears of War 3, Duke Nukem, yada yada, you just need one-liners. You just need simple tags. It doesn't need to be deep. I think, personally, a lot of the game writers are afraid to write for a female lead. And that when somebody finally takes the time to write for a good female lead in some kind of shooter, some kind of adventure game, you know, not necessarily Lara Croft Tomb Raider type, but something along those lines, you could sell gangbusters. As big as Modern Warfare, as big as Tomb Raider, maybe not as big as Halo. But it's just going to take somebody willing to take the risk and write a female well. Not just, you know, use the silly giant triple E fun bags and the fact that she's kicking ass as your whole total plot line. You know, actually writing a good story for her. And I think this is just stupid. You know, if Activision's actually doing this, then they're stupid. Which leads me to my second problem. The gaming enthusiast press, and this is Kotaku for this particular story, seems to like to slap around Activision, even more than EA these days. Now, to a point, Bobby Kotick has asked for that to a certain extent, but it almost seems like this is becoming the cool thing to do, what the cool kids do. Let's write a story about Activision. Let's trash Activision a little more. My problem in this case with it is this just isn't Activision. This is damn near the entire industry, at least the AAA guys. EA's no better. Take-Two's no better. Rockstar's no better. You know, so I get a little irritated with this whole, it's just Activision, har har, wink wink, say no more. Patrick, do you agree that this just isn't one developer, it's the whole damn industry?
Oh yes, it's definitely the whole industry. I mean, I remember the amazing storylines and the depth of character in Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball. I mean, there is an amazing, titillating video game. Respectful of all.
Speaking of physics that people should be bitching about on YouTube.
Yep, there's some unrealistic bouncing physics right there. But yeah, it is not just Activision. It is the trend to pick on Activision, and as you say, maybe they deserve it. But pretty much every company has seemed to go away from that. I guess Nintendo with Metroid and Princess Peach, she had her own game. But yeah, every company, you think about it, they're sticking to the macho men, the Venus Marcus, the whoever. So definitely, you gotta look at the industry as a whole and not just Activision on their own.
Gunsage, do you want to add the married bandwagon? Do you think that as well, or do you got a different take?
Pretty much the same. I mean, the industry just seems apprehensive about female leads. It's not that they don't use them, it's that they don't use them often. And when they do, usually it's so cookie cutter. I mean, I joke about it a lot, but literally, Bayonetta was actually a pretty decent female lead. I mean, yes, she was an ass kicker. She was, you know, doing all this provocative shit in the game and everything. But that's Platinum Studios right there. You know, they're fucking, it's basically a combination of God Hand and Devil May Cry turned to the absolute most ridiculous. And it worked. I mean, as a character, I thought she was a pretty solid character, and I didn't feel like she, like, her actual, what's the best way to put this so that I won't get slapped immediately? Her dimensions were out of control either. Like, you know, the original Lara Croft, it was like, yeah, I don't think you're going to be jumping quite the way you are with those things. Unless they're, fucking helium balloons or some shit. with her, it was a little more believable. It's like, no, she actually looks like an ass kicker. She looks like an ass kicking, sexy librarian kind of thing, you know. And that's kind of why I'm like, well, you know, she both is and isn't what a female lead should be. It almost seems like she's sexy for the purpose of attracting the audience, you know, the demographic, the lowest common denominator. But on the same token, not only as a game, but also as an actual female lead for the game, I was like, yeah, she works out pretty well. It's just you don't really find a lot of those very often. Either you'll find a female that's so muted they might as well be whatever, a fucking statue, or you'll find a female that's ridiculously over-dimensioned, you know, just for the purposes of, tee-hee, I'm cute, and all this shit. So I thought she was a pretty happy medium in that respect.
But you think, as we do, that it's pretty much industry-wide, and this is just, oh, hey, Activision's the whipping boy this month, or this year.
Oh, yeah.
I agree with you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I agree with you. And to close out the story, Bayonetta had a couple dimensions that was like, really? Yeah, that's fun to look at, but a little out of control. But she was by far not as bad as, like, the early Tomb Raiders, like you're saying, definitely. But here's the thing, and I challenge all big game devs, or the indie guys. If you actually write the script for a female lead first and worry about her boob and butt size second and write a good, compelling story just as you would for anything else, unless it's just a bang-bang shoot-em-up, and I would like to see the female equivalent of Duke Nukem. It might be amusing. But point is if you write the story, write it well, and plug in a good-to-look-at but engaging female lead, you will sell games. You will sell games. You will sell games to female gamers. You will sell games to male gamers who don't think with their penis 24/7, although I think they're like Bigfoot. And you will sell it to the guys who do think with their penis 24/7. So this trend of, and it goes beyond just, you know, oh, there's a bunch of sexist pigs. No, they're just being idiots. I mean, Kirby's had his own game. If you can make Kirby into a lead, I think you can handle just about anything else. Patrick, any final thoughts?
Not really. I think we pretty much
beat that one.
Covered it.
Beat that one to death with a stick. Okay.
We beat those boobs with a big stick.
You guys actually behaved a lot better than I thought you would, too. I'm proud of.
I think Gutsage's wife is within striking.
I wasn't worried about him. I knew she was within elbow drop, double arm DDT to the floor distance. Because of the way he paused before she said her dimensions. I'm going to start using that instead of boobs. She has nice dimensions. Those have to be at least D dimensions. anyway. next story. It also comes to us from Game Industry Biz, and not sure how much discussion we'll get out of it, but I think this guy's absolutely right, and it's a really great idea. Chahi, XBLA, PSN, the perfect platform for risky games. Another World creator, Eric Chahi, currently working on a new title, Project Dust for Ubisoft, has claimed that XBLA and PSN are ideal for more adventurous games. Speaking to Game Industry Biz recently, he argued that the key benefits of console digital distribution were freedom, freedom, and freedom. Added Chahi, there's no distribution or retail to worry about, no manufacturer production costs, so it's less risky for a publisher to sign an original game. I think it's the perfect platform for this kind of game. That's not really mainstream. Risk-taking wasn't the only boon he saw in XBLA and PSN, however. At retail, games are more expensive, whereas on XBLA and PSN, they're cheaper, so you can reach more people. However, Chahi also revealed that communicating on an original project is always challenging, hinting that Dust had at one point been hard to sell to his bosses at Ubisoft. You know, this guy absolutely nails it. He's absolutely right. Patrick, do you think that we'll start seeing this as a trend more and more, testing new ideas and things with $15 XBLA PSN games?
I certainly hope so, and I definitely agree with pretty much everything he's saying. I think PSN and Xbox Live Arcade are very much almost perfectly suited for developers to make risky and quote-unquote creative titles. You know, it's like he was saying, it's cheap. It's a pretty cheap platform for many reasons. It also doesn't take a long time to make these games, also compared to full retail titles. You know, these are two big problems that indie developers have when making creative artistic title, time, and money, but it doesn't cost that much to make an Xbox Live game or a PlayStation Network game, and it doesn't take that long either. So PSN and Xbox Live Arcade are pretty much designed, I think, to help eliminate a lot of the problems that you would have if you had a risky game and it failed. I think the biggest problem about risky games and creative titles is not the making the games, it's if they fail and it's a retail game. All the things they talked about and the things I talked about, the time, the money, you know, it could crush a company. But if it doesn't work out and it's an Xbox Live Arcade title, okay, it, you know, they tried and it didn't cost them a lot of money, it wouldn't crush their entire company. You know, developers would take a massive risk to spend a few years making a really risky creative title at a retail store and probably see it ignored by generic shooter sequel after generic popular sequel. But on PlayStation Network and Xbox Live Arcade, there have already been successful titles, right? What's that one on PlayStation Network that's really beautiful musical game? Is that Flower? And of course, we know Braid and Limbo. They've been reasonably critical successes, and I think he's right. Risky games or artistic games, downloadable content, like maybe Steam could also maybe be put into this sentence as well with PlayStation and Xbox Live. I think he's right. I think it's the perfect place for them. I hope to see more.
Gunsage, to give you actually something to talk about. Do you see developers using this to start testing new game mechanics as the years go forward?
Well, I think they already have to a degree. The only thing I don't like is even on Xbox Live Arcade, you're seeing a lot of the same. I noticed this even in the indie section where it's like, oh, look, generic twin stick shooter number 27. You know, and it was just like copy-paste. It was like there was very little difference between this, that, or the other. Now, the good news is the ones that actually are trying and actually are being innovative are getting noticed. And I think that's number one because as soon as there's a new arrival, you're immediately notified about it. You can immediately, you know, browse it, find it immediately, all this other stuff, rate it, compare it to different stuff, at least on Destination Arcade. They really need to keep that. But I think we're going to start seeing more games like PB Winterbottom, like Limbo, like Braid, just like Darwinia. Well, technically Darwinia was originally on the PC, but that's irrelevant. The point is that you're going to see more and more companies, A, churning out something really cheaply, but it's still going to do well because it doesn't cost that much money anyway for gamers to go ahead and download. And B, a lot of independent developers making it big, like, for example, with Castle Crashers. I mean, I couldn't imagine paying more than $15, especially in a retail store for a game like that. Even though it's a really, really good game, I still couldn't see myself doing it. But $15 Xbox Live? Oh, hell yeah. I mean, it's a fundamental principle as far as that goes, but also it's like, it's right there on my system. I don't have to fuddle around with a bunch of different disks and everything like that. So even in the event that I start to run low on hard drive space, well, that's okay because it saves the fact that I downloaded it once and paid for it once. I don't have to keep paying for it to download it. So that's an even more convenient way to keep all this shit in a row. So yeah, I absolutely see this being a very good thing.
Yeah, and actually, Patrick had it right. Steam should also be included in this, and I'll tell you why. I'm not sure it's really risky or introduced anything new to the gaming lexicon, but I'll show you one that was basically a small-time title that started on PC and is now just going everywhere, and it's called Plants vs. Zombies. That was first on Steam. I picked it up. I paid $20 for it, I think. But that was its price, you know, $20 from PopCap Games. It is now on the iPad, iPhone. It's coming to XBLA. It's going to PSN. And it's also, if I recall correctly, and I'm not 100% sure on this, it's also going to have a retail release version that's going to have, like, Peggle and a couple other games on it that you get on the disc. I don't remember the details, but I vaguely recall seeing something on Twitter about that. And that's a perfect example. These guys made this Plants vs. Zombies games. It's mindless, but it's fun as hell. When it comes to XBLA or PSN, I recommend at least checking out the demo. And it just mutated from there. I could see World of Goo being that way. I could see Limbo maybe being that way, depending on how it is. But I definitely think Steam, the XBLA, and PSN are definitely a great way for either new developers or existing developers who want to test something, or bigger developers that just are screwing around and want to make a quick game, for them to absolutely do this and to try out new game mechanics, to try out, you know, different things that you can't put in a $60 game. And he even said what you were talking about in an earlier story, Patrick. You know, the production costs are so much that you don't have to worry about that when you're doing it digital. You know, kind of like you were talking about with the map pack. So they're going to make more profit on it. It kind of ties in with what you were talking about with the map pack thing.
Yep, definitely.
So, you know, I highly endorse this stuff. It's very cool. And I'm looking forward to, looking forward to more games that take advantage of this. You know, we might have to wade through a little bit more shit and copycats like Gunsage was talking about, but it's worth it to me. Go try games on XBLA, people. Okay,
yep.
Our last story. And what I found just before the show, because, well, we hadn't talked about Sony. And what is Sony's favorite thing to do but make complete giant asses out of themselves and try and act like they're being serious? This also comes from Kotaku. Its headline is, iToy creator says controller free is limited. No shit. Really? Sony's R&D wizard, Dr. Richard Marks, has two impressive entries on his resume. Creating the PlayStation iToy motion controls and the upcoming PlayStation Move motion controls. And he thinks controller-less controls are limited. I created the technology for iToy, which we made a controllerless device, and it was really neat, and it enabled new things, but it's not the end-all, be-all in control. We entered limits with it, and I think without a controller, you run into limits of what you can enable, Dr. Marks tells T3 Magazine. You can do things like track the whole body. You can have dancing and exercise, but a lot of the core gameplay ideas that we want to see happen and want to enable just weren't possible with only a camera, says Dr. Marks. We would have done that. We look at as much as we could do with just a camera, but it wasn't the right choice, we felt. Yada, yada, yada. Okay, ignoring the fact that this guy's an asshole and is just doing his Sony spin doctoring thing for just a second. I had a couple buddies who had this iToy thing, and it didn't even do half to a third what I've seen the Kinect demos do, even when they're having lag issues. Gunsage, did you actually have an iToy? Because I saw these things twice, and they were absolute pieces of crap. My original piece of junk web camera did better back in, like, 2000.
Dude, I had a DDR mat for the PlayStation 1, and even I think the fucking iToy is a piece of shit.
Yeah, so I know you have your concerns about Kinect, but this guy trying to use the iToy to say Kinect's no good, ignoring the fact that he works for Sony, is pretty stupid. Yes?
Well, I mean, we don't even know what the Kinect can do yet. I love it whenever a lot of developers like to go ahead and say, oh, that thing's going to be such a piece of shit. Oh, 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 and it's not even out yet. I love it. I really do. And, yeah, he's absolutely spin doctoring.
But, I mean, just given the tech demos that we have seen and the, you know, ignore it, or even with a little bit of lag, does it appears to me, and I saw the iToy in action, it appears to me the Kinect has a lot more to offer than the iToy did. It isn't just an iToy ripoff. Am I wrong in thinking that? Just going off what we have seen.
Well, again, I've never had an iToy, so I don't know, but as far as what I can tell so far, if it can do everything that they say that it's going to do, then okay, it might go ahead and offer a few new options, and it would definitely be better than, you know, what I'm guessing the iToy couldn't do.
Patrick, take it away on tearing apart the Sony spin doctoring and anything else you'd like to add.
Well, first of all, he's bashing something that he made. It doesn't even make sense. He created the iToy, and the iToy sucks, apparently, because now he's using something else that's much better. That something else is basically the Wiimote and the Nunchuck. So basically what he's saying is his original idea was garbage, so then he copied Nintendo to make something better. And then he goes and says, you know, the Kinect, I'm always going to call it Natal for some reason, I don't know why, but the Kinect won't work. And he says, what did he say? It's not the end-all of control, something around that. Well, has Microsoft ever said that Kinect is the end-all for controls? Is Microsoft going to stop producing the Microsoft Xbox controller? Are all games not going to use controllers anymore? I was under the impression that Kinect was something different for people, something casual. It would never did they say it was the end all for controls. It seems kind of weird. He's just bashing something that seems, it's a camera and it's better than his product. His product failed, the iToy, or, you know, a Sony fan will say it didn't fail, but it wasn't successful. So he has to bash something that probably will end up being a better technology. They never said that Natal or Kinect is going to be the ultimate control. They just said it's something new. It's something different.
I actually saw the iToy. Two of my friends had it. It was a complete piece of garbage. And as I was asking Gunsage just for his input, because I thought you had one or had used one, Gunsage. I apologize. But still, your your comment was a comment, and I appreciate it. I lost it totally. Anyways, but I agree with Gunsage that it's like you have, you know, Kinect isn't even out yet. But even off the tech demos, and yes, I've heard about the tech demos having problems in Taiwan or Bangkok or whatever. You know, what I've seen of Kinect, if it even works 80% of the time, is better than what I saw with the iToy. And Sony kind of just ditched it after a while. I think you can buy one for the PlayStation 3, but yeah, you don't see them marketing the living hell out of it. This is just Sony bashing Microsoft. You know, they seem to think that's good PR for them, and maybe with their hardcore fan base, it is. But it just turns me off. It just makes me absolutely not want to have much to do with Sony. And it's getting worse. I mean, they just keep doing this shit, and Microsoft and Nintendo doesn't seem to. You know, Patrick, real quick, does Sony honestly think this is helping them promote their stuff by doing this crap? Because this guy works for Sony.
Oh, definitely. I think they all went into a giant conference and they were told that, you know, the best way to promote your product is to bash the competition, because they're all doing that. I don't know. I guess, like you said, the hardcore Sony fanboys are going to agree, but that's not who they're looking for. They're looking for new people, and I really find it is, like you said, it's kind of interesting. Nintendo and Microsoft, at least this generation, aren't doing a lot of bashing of the other companies, but it's not helping them. I don't think Sony's making fun of the competition is going to help their marketing, that's for sure.
Gunsage, do you think this is a good idea for Sony, or they just don't care anymore?
Well, I think they're entirely banking on their new marketing advertising black kid for the PSP to go ahead and bring it to the streets, yo. I'm looking at this and I'm going, you guys, you know, I don't think you know what the fuck you're doing anymore. I really don't. I don't know. Some of your commercials are kind of funny, but you kind of seem like the, you know, the kid who's not getting enough attention, so you jump on top of a table and start yelling and screaming and shit. So, yeah. I mean, you're looking kind of fucking shitty.
First off, and I'm only going to say this once, I am more ghetto than that stupid-ass Marcus kid, and I'm sick of those commercials. Second off, the sad thing to me about this is the PS3 is a piece of hardware, is a really good piece of hardware. But Sony's constant troll marketing, and that's what they literally are. They're becoming like internet trolls, and the WonderPod crew has dealt with a few internet trolls this year, both connected to WonderPod and not. And that's really what Sony's starting to get. Like, and the sad thing is they have a good piece of hardware. They are getting a better game catalog. But this is just making me go, you know, I don't need to save up this year to get a PS3. It's like, really? I mean, if Microsoft and Nintendo were bashing back at them as much as Sony seems to be bashing the other two, I'd kind of go, okay, it's just like the companies are acting like fanboys. But this just is like, really? Really? You just can't go, hey, look, here's our Sony Move Wiimote Plus. Have at it. You know, I don't think they're in any better. To be honest, I don't think they're going to sell any better than the Kinect is. The Kinect is more of a gamble because it's not at all familiar, unlike Sony copying the Wiimote. So, we'll see. Again, time will tell. But I've passed on a couple other Sony bashing on things stories going, you know, we've just done a little bit too much Sony. I just couldn't pass up this. Well, and that has been news. This week, instead of Gamer Dick, since we didn't have any Gamer Dicks, we're going to do a... I hate the fucking word retro, but we're going to do a retro game segment that I'm going to come up with a much better name for as we go along. Gunsage, what is our retro game this week?
Well, since we're doing a retro segment, I figured we ought to have the theme of disco, and that is exactly why I thought about Gauntlet for the arcade, because it has nothing to do with disco, but it does have to do with medieval stuff. So, yes, very close. You can see how I'd be a little confused. Anyway, in Gauntlet, you can play as one of four playable characters. They also have four different colors. You can play as a warrior, a Valkyrie, a wizard, or... Okay, that's not a thief. I thought it was a thief. It's an elf. Well, technically, he's an archer or a ranger, if you will. But yes.
Wait a minute, he's not a thief?
No, you actually fight thieves in the game. I thought he was a thief at first, too.
I have always thought he was a thief. Oh, wait a minute. Elf needs food. Yeah, yeah, never mind. Oops. Oh, there goes all my childhood.
Kind of weird.
Yeah, there goes all my childhood memories of thinking I was a thief. Eh, fucking Christ.
But I think the main reason they did that is because when you do fight thieves, what they'll do is they'll steal crap from you, which is always goddamn annoying.
I hated that.
But I actually got reintroduced to this recently because I downloaded it for the Xbox Live Arcade, the actual arcade version remastered and everything. But the version that I first became familiar with was the actual NES version. I didn't play it in the arcade initially, and that was in 1987. It's actually not a bad game, although I liked the sequel a little bit more because you could do the whole four-player thing if you had the multi-tap thing. Beyond that, in general, it's just a really fun multiplayer game. You see a lot of references, well, not references, I shouldn't say, but inspirations from the game. I mean, if you go back and play this game, you can see how, number one, it's a great game to go ahead and play with multiple people. But number two, unless I'm mistaken, it's one of the very first that you could go ahead and do something like that. I mean, it's, 87, so I don't think that'd be too far out of line. It's pretty decent.
Do you have any specific retro memories of playing this game from when you were a kid?
Yes, when I was a kid, I had no idea what I was doing. It was great. Actually, well, I can elaborate. I mean, it says here in the wiki, which is probably the reason I didn't understand what the hell I was doing. The difference between the NES and the arcade version, there were a lot of different things that the announcer or whatever over the game would, they would say in the arcade version. Well, they had to trim a lot of things for the NES version, obviously. So in the process of, kind of like dumbing it down, conserving file space and all this, the announcer barely gave you any information on what you were supposed to do, where you're supposed to go. I know, I mean, you look at Gauntlet and it seems so obvious, but it literally is one of those games where it's like, if you really do not know what's going on, if you really have no idea that, oh, I'm supposed to shoot these dungeons. Like, I didn't even know I was supposed to shoot the dungeons to go ahead and prevent the monsters from coming, so often I would get overwhelmed very, very quickly. So yeah, my memories come from me being a dumb kid, basically.
Patrick, are you ready to go, or do you want me to give it a swing?
Sure, I'll give it a shot. Gauntlet. Well, most of the classic arcade games that I've played, they're kind of special for me because I usually went to the arcade, and when I was younger, I always went to the arcade with my brother. So it was kind of cool, the two of us taking off on a Friday after school or whatever and walking down. There was an arcade kind of down the hill from where we lived, probably about a 5-minute walk, and it had some of the games that I really liked, the Star Wars game, and it also had Gauntlet. My brother was a huge Dungeons & Dragons fan, like big Dungeons & Dragons fan. I never really got into Dungeons & Dragons, so for him it was a very cool game, and because it was a multiplayer game, I don't really remember, but I don't think it was much easier when one person played as opposed to four. It probably was scaled back a bit, but you definitely had an advantage if you had another person playing with you. So he used to always get me to play the game too, even though he was the big D&D fan. The problem was that we only played games with each other. We wouldn't, if there was somebody else playing, we would wait for that person to finish, and it would just be me and my brother. So we never had four players playing at the same time, and I think you really needed the four players to get far in the game. But I mean, it was fun. I liked it. You know, you talked about the sound effects that were lacking in the NES version. I really liked the voices in the arcade one, you know. When you ran out of food, it would be, you know, Elf needs food badly, or you're about to die, or if you were dumb and you shot the food, don't shoot food. And it was good fun.
That's my favorite. I need to find that as a sound effect and use it. Don't shoot food. That voice was awesome.
Yeah, and you know, I did play it. I rented it, or I played it somewhere on a home console, and it wasn't with my brother, and it didn't have the voice that we're talking about. It never felt the same. It wasn't bad, but definitely the arcade version of Gauntlet was pretty darn cool. You know, more so for my brother because he was the D&D fan, but it was neat. And I think they made an updated version of it on the original Xbox. Kind of like a 3D kind of version of it. I never played it because I didn't want it to ruin my retro memories of a really cool multiplayer game. Really one of the first multiplayer video games that I played.
Actually, there was Gauntlet 2 in 86, Gauntlet 3 in 91, Gauntlet Legends in 98, Gauntlet Dark Legacy in 2000, and Gauntlet Seven Sorrows in 05. None of which I've touched. There's a remastered one like Gunsage is talking about that's on the 360 arcade. I do own that. Gauntlet for me is probably my personal favorite arcade game. Much like Patrick, there was a little Italian restaurant in 1986 that had some at the same time, but in this, you know, in a time frame that had the original Street Fighter, Super Mario Brothers cabinet, Gauntlet, and I think Spy Hunter. But I had three little friends from school, and believe me, Patrick, you missed out, and if you ever find an old cabinet of Gauntlet with four people with you, beg them to play. It is the most comical yet funnest experience you will ever have, playing Gauntlet with four people on the same cabinet. I mean, if you remember the layout, it is hilarious. You were banging and bumping into each other like it's a scrum against the hockey boards, yeah. But at the same time, you were having so much fun. And like you said, the voice, I don't know who did that voice, but it was, you know, it was lacking in some of the later versions. But I think my key memory of Gauntlet, as much as it was fun playing with my buddies, is when we got our Commodore 64, I got a floppy disk version of Gauntlet. And as much as I loved it, and I think it actually had the voice, it didn't sound as good to me or to my memories as it did coming out of the cabinet, but the funny thing about when I got the Commodore 64 version was my mother got addicted to it. She loves Gauntlet. To this day, she still says, is there any version of Gauntlet I can get? Like, you know, she plays the Facebook game, so she's like hoping there'll be a version of Gauntlet show up on Facebook or something like that. But Gauntlet to me is just hack and slash, just blast to play with your buddies. A good game to come up with for our first, old game segment, retro game segment, whatever you want to talk about. And I really enjoyed it. I actually, Patrick, if you haven't played it on the 360, at least try the demo. It's not going to ruin your childhood memories, but at the same time, it's fun to play again.
Is it an exact remake or is it a update?
It's pretty
with, like, 3D graphics.
I don't know, Gunsage, what would you call it? I wouldn't say it's reskinned like, what was that one we were playing a few months ago? The GoldenEye clone.
Perfect Dark.
Oh, Perfect Dark.
I wouldn't say it's been, gussied up that much. It's still pretty much the basic top-downs hack and slash Gauntlet, but the graphics are more crisper. You agree, Gunsage?
Yeah,
it's been a while since I've played it.
Well, they sort of remastered it, but not really. Crystal Dynamics, I think they went ahead and did that one. They also did Contra and a couple of other ones on there where basically they ported it and they slightly updated the resolution. Beyond that, they really didn't do anything additional to it because they wanted to keep it accurate.
But yeah, I for Patrick and for anybody else that's never played it, I definitely, the Xbox 360 demo or arcade version is the closest I've seen. Yeah, like Patrick, I never played any of those other ones I read off here a little bit ago because, A, I'd heard long before I had a chance to get them they were crap, and B, I didn't want my original experience of playing Gauntlet. As a matter of fact, if I could find a Gauntlet cabinet and had the money, I would buy a Gauntlet cabinet just because it'd be fun to have. But I definitely recommend checking out the Xbox 360 version. It's pretty decent. Okay, that has been our first time out, little rough because we threw it together while recording retro segment. Here's my problem. I like doing a segment. Hopefully we kind of started off with a game you knew, and if you didn't, try and find a way to check it out. But I hate the name retro. It is so overused and so hoard out at this point. So you fine listeners, or at least the 5 or 6 we communicate with, what I want you to do is come up with a name for this segment. We're going to be doing it now and again when we don't have gamer dicks. So if you would like to come up with a name for the segment, we'd really appreciate it because I've thought of a few, can't think of anything. Even Patrick and Gunsage, we can come up with a name with it. Hit us up on the Facebook, other things, which we'll talk about here in just a second. But yeah, I want something better or something different than just retro, or we're going to the old game museum or some stupid shit like that.
I've got one.
We'll talk about it later. I like that, but we'll let the listeners get in on it a little bit first, Gunsage. Sound good? Yeah, too bad. He's telling me no in text chat because he doesn't want it recorded. You're a prick. Patrick, speaking of ways for them to get a hold of us so they can name the segment, which Gunsage is currently throwing a 3-year-old tantrum in the text chat, why don't you tell them about one way they can get a hold of us?
Well, there's definitely multiple ways because we are whores. WonderPod is on Facebook. If you do a little search or a friend request, what you want to look for is WonderPod Online. Join the 103 or 4 of us or whatever it is in the party there. That is definitely one way of doing it.
Now, Patrick, you also doing the YouTube videos again?
I am doing YouTube videos again. I've figured out my Movie Maker, sort of. So, last episode, 28, is up on YouTube. Of course, it's a short version. It's a highlight reel. So just do a search in YouTube for WonderPod. You'll see all sorts of ones if you've missed them. And our most current one is episode 28. That just came out yesterday on YouTube.
Also, because I'm a glutton for punishment, this week I will give you my Twitter account if you'd like to follow me on Twitter. Because as we said, we're whores, but you got to find a way to promote yourself. So we're doing it. Get over it. My Twitter account is at O-R-I-G-I-M. That's right, O-R-I-G-I-M, Orgim, as we like to call it, although it has 1,000 pronouncements. But on top of that, you can also get a hold of us by emailing morphinenation23@gmail.com, morphinenation23@gmail.com. You can do that to send us questions, insults. If you'd like to throw a name in the hat for the retro segment, you can do all of that at that email address, morphinenation23@gmail.com. Until episode 30, I am Bruce McGee. That's right, I used my real name this week. I'm out of here.
Goodbye.
Shitbag. Do your goodbye again.
Red Sage needs food badly.
Do the goodbye one more time, Patrick.
Goodbye.
Okay.
Don't shoot food.
Don't shoot food. Okay, now stop the end stuff for a second.